This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You're listening to Goodfellas Minute 61.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care.
Hello, welcome to Goodfellas Minute, the only podcast that analyzes the Martin Scorsese picture Goodfellas one grisly joking minute at a time. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm with Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And Ron Richards.
Hey.
And our special guest this week is independent filmmaker Henry Nazarbacht. Hello, Henry.
Hello. Hello.
Hello, Henry.
How are we? I refuse to be referred to as anything but Henry for this entire tenure.
For the duration of the week.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to slip.
Thanks for joining us. And let's get started. So this minute kicks off with Jimmy likening the guy in the painting to someone they may know, who may be dead in their trunk, and then ends with Henry explaining over the voiceover they've got a problem because Billy Batts was a made man. So we finish off the very delightful midnight snack, or 3 a.m. snack, with Tommy's mother here before we move on to actually burying Billy Batts' body as we return to the very first scene of the film.
Yeah, the wrap-up of the meal and looking at the painting and De Niro making the joke, this has always stuck with me ever since I saw the movie for the first time. The guy in the painting doesn't look anything like him.
Well, without the beard.
Even without the beard. Doesn't look anything like him.
Well, if you're spending, 2 hours stabbing a guy and then another few hours thinking about how you're going to chop him up, like, he's on your mind. You're probably seeing him anywhere. Like, Mrs. Scorsese probably looks like Frank Vincent to them, you know?
It's like, you know, in the cartoons when they get hungry?
Yeah, the chicken. Yeah, the chicken leg.
Their idea of that is Frank Vincent. Like, at one point, like, Tommy leaned over to Jimmy and he was like, you notice my mother looks like that?
Yeah, without the beard.
Without the mustache. Yeah. I really also like, once again, how much Jimmy enjoys his own joke.
Oh, loves with it. A quintessential De Niro laugh.
Yeah.
Tongue falling out of the mouth.
That actor, the two faces, like the white actor faces where the one's frowning and the one's...
Yes.
Like,
yes.
De Niro's face when he laughs.
Yes, you're right.
Where the eyes sort of do that. No one else's face does that, but apparently he got the mask.
Somehow. It's amazing.
I like in this bit that when he says it, like Henry, who's been uncomfortable this whole time, makes that face that just goes, this is not okay.
I felt like that was the first time at the dinner table where Henry looked comfortable. Like he's like it's a genuine smile and laugh, you know, like
shook his head like I should.
Well, yeah, there's the head shake, but it's the same head shake when one of your buddies says something that they shouldn't have, you know what I mean? Like it's that.
Also, the conversation's off of him again, like it's not about that joke and they're not talking about how quiet he is or anything like that. Like he's off the spotlight now, they're talking about the painting or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a good thing they're laughing. Nobody hears the banging on the trunk going on.
Well, so that's my other question. So the banging on the is the banging on the trunk actually happening with that pan to the car, or is the banging on the trunk happening?
Is it a
crossfade? Because if they didn't hear the bang on the trunk and then drive, because they've got to be in Queens somewhere at Tommy's mother's house. And I went back and I looked at the beginning of the movie and where they. I'm pretty sure they're on the Taconic. Pretty sure that's the parkway they're on. And so that's at least 45-minute drive to the point where they where Henry hears the banging. So
well,
I think,
he could have woken up.
Yeah, he could fall in and out of consciousness. The blood loss.
Yeah.
Here's a couple of things. One, the camera goes through the window, and that car is right there.
Yes.
I mean, the dining room happens to be feet from the dead body.
That's a normal Queens house layout.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I know.
The window is also closed, Josh.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
But
yeah.
Also, I don't know if you've been in an old house in Queens. Sometimes the windows are not up to spec, and this was also 45 years ago.
Yeah.
So there's that. So
are you making the argument that they should be able to hear it?
I'm saying, yeah, it's a telltale heart kind of thing that's going on there, which is actually probably more what they're trying to accomplish.
No, I think it's an audio crossfade.
Yeah.
Well, either way, I'd like to just point out that Billy's really putting up a fight. For a guy who has been that brutalized, I mean, he was shaking the whole car.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. It's the fight for his entire life.
Yeah, what would you do in that scenario?
Oh, I would have given up back at the bar.
Would you be looking for a knife to just finish yourself off in the trunk?
Exactly. I'm done. Because I'm not gonna go through physical therapy and rehab and all that. Like, I'm not gonna battle my way back.
Stitches.
Yeah, exactly.
He's an old man.
Right.
He's a fighter. You have to give Billy back that.
He just got out of jail. Like, yeah. 6 hours ago.
He's 50 years old at this point.
Ah. So. I just got out of jail.
Oh man!
So then, after we leave the house, anything more in the house, or should we move to the
classic actual... Billy?
Anything more on the ending of the meal, the painting? Anything more?
Nope.
Okay, so I love the next sequence in which we quickly speed through the cold open again, from the drive to the noticing of the sound to stabbing and shooting him again, and then we get to see him buried. I love the pace of it. I love the use of still frames. I think the
reverse
sound is great.
Frame.
Well, there's a couple of things with it that I know. Well, two things. One is that if you go back and look at the original shooting script, the flashback in the beginning was not in the original plan. Mm-hmm. It started with the Bat's murder, but it didn't have that same kind of jump the way it is now. So it's cool, kind of interesting to see how that kind of happens. But then also, like, I agree with you. I like the pace of it, but there's the shot of Henry opening the trunk, and then the next shot is the trunk is closed again.
Which is, I saw for the first time watching this minute. I've seen this movie,
right.
You know, 100 times. I'd never noticed. It doesn't matter.
Right. It's almost like an optical illusion. It's weird, right? Yeah, because I'd never noticed it either. I thought that was funny.
It's surreal. Yeah. I mean, you're watching it. You see there's a reverse freeze frame, which is the first time where Jimmy, instead of starting with him moving and then freezing him, he's frozen and then he starts to move again. That's right. Different. This is all that sort of, you know, since we saw it's 1970 now, we're in a different... We're in a different epoch. Things are all happening differently than they were before. And if you can feel it as we go through all, we were saying it before, but as we go through this week, it has a different pace entirely. Like, everything is a little different. And I think that this is a good symbol for it, I guess, this whole little montage thing.
I just verified I'm completely wrong. It totally was in the shooting script the way it was. The way they did it here. I don't know.
I can't trust a word you're saying.
I don't know why I said that. For some reason, I think I saw a version of the script or it wasn't, but I just found the shooting script and it is there.
Oh, you saw a version of it.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. An earlier
version. This is an important lesson for the listeners.
Yeah.
Don't take what we're saying for granted.
Not all comments will be valid.
Not all comments will be, but when possible, we'll completely call ourselves out.
Exactly. What really resonated with me this time watching it was the gunshot flashes and the whether it's a still or slow motion or whatever when Jimmy's shooting in the trunk and those bright lens flare flashes are almost like paparazzi bulbs.
Yeah, they fill the whole universe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Look at that. Listen to you with your film school talk. That was
and there's
nice.
A tiny, tiny freeze frame on the profile shot of all three of them, and Jimmy's in shooting it. It's like a freeze frame of just the illumination from the trunk. It's just gorgeous.
You know, it's really similar to the wedding scene.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Remember with the flash? Yeah, the flash photography when they're getting married, and they used those freeze frames. Like, that's interesting. I wonder if that was meant to be juxtaposed or not, whatever the term is. Not juxtaposed, but
just probably for the similar effect.
Yeah, yeah. So after that, then they're disposing of the body, and my comment is like, so Tommy killed him, right?
Well,
I mean, Tommy and Jimmy
killed
him, right?
Yeah.
Right. So why is Henry digging the hole?
Also, I think he did it all by himself because those guys are still wearing their jackets.
Exactly. Like, why did Henry pull the short straw here?
Why is Henry driving the car?
Right.
Like, he's the one. Why did he didn't participate in the murder?
Yep.
He, like, at the beginning of the when Tommy comes back to kill Billy Batts, he's in the corner like doing the fucking books or something.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
He's at the end of the bar, and he goes over and locks the door. He doesn't interrupt his friends, but it's a decision that they've made. He's not going to be able to sway them out of the decision,
right.
But he's going to do everything in his power to make sure that they get away with it. He's to help his friends.
Yeah, so I mean, yes, him and Jimmy are complicit in this, and that I mean, those are the two funny things I thought
Jimmy's a little more than complicit.
Well, that's what I mean. That's my point. In the voiceover, he's like, Tommy killing Batts is bad, and Tommy, and it's like Jimmy was pretty involved in it, you know?
Okay. Let's work this out.
Right.
Tommy was definitely the reason.
Yes.
He was the spark. He was the catalyst.
Yes.
And so all that his crew did was back him up. And maybe that part's accepted.
In Mob Law.
Mob Law?
Mob Law.
Mob Law. In Mob Rules, that means that the guy who joins in on the killing is okay as long as he didn't start the...
Yeah, he didn't start it. Right, okay. Yeah.
I think they're just playing their roles.
Are you saying that authoritatively?
No, I'm asking you if that's what you're saying.
Oh, that was a question. Right, no, yeah, that's sort of what I'm getting at.
I was agreeing with it. I back Connor.
Yeah, no, he was asking a question, and we were like, he knows what he's talking about. That's fine.
Fine. So that excuses referring it to as Tommy's murder and whatever, but it doesn't explain why Henry is doing all the work tonight.
Because he didn't do any of the killing. You're supposed to be doing this stuff too, Henry.
They got to use Henry's car. They got to drive to his mother's. They got to drive upstate. Henry's got to dig the hole. They drag the body in, but Henry's got to bury it. Like, why is Henry doing all the
work? Also, like, think about
it. Scorsese always makes a point of pointing out Henry is a helpful guy, and he like, as fucked up as this sounds, like, he cares about his friends, and he doesn't want them to get caught. And his friends probably know that. They've known him for, like, 25 years, that they're going to take advantage of him being such a helpful guy, selfless guy? I don't know.
And he's got things organized.
Yeah.
And also, they're a tight crew, and the murder happened in his establishment. I mean, right. he's involved as you can be.
Tommy is pretty emotional. Leave him,
he had to go back and clean the nightclub. He's the one who, like, is hosing out his... He needs to find some enzyme cleaner, first of all, for that trunk. Because that hose alone is not going to do it.
Well,
that's later. That's later.
That's much later, yeah.
Sorry.
For a different reason.
What trunk?
That's exactly right.
I also enjoyed how Tommy and Jimmy just kick the body into the hole.
Yes.
They drag it to the edge. Instead of dragging it all the way in, they stand up and kick it.
Yep.
It's one last fuck you.
We understand that Jimmy loves to kick.
The final dignity.
Let's talk a little bit about what's said as opposed to just what's done. Henry does some more explaining about how things work, and he tells us that murder was the only way that everybody stayed in line. That's the only thing they could think of.
Well, I mean,
their business is crime, so it's not like you can do anything.
Yeah,
You know, they're not gonna go to the cops on each other. That would be against the rules.
That's a rough system.
I mean, that's a one strike and you're out kind of system.
It's kind of like that. Oh, well, if I screw this up, I'm dead.
Well, that said,
and yet
that said,
a lot of chances.
Reflect on your own personal professional experience.
Everyone's going to make peace with their own morality, Josh.
Exactly. And think about when you're at work and you accidentally screwed up something or whatever. You didn't get murdered. as the stakes go higher with the work,
we had to have a meeting, and we had to wait for that other guy to call in from remote, and. Ugh, there was a fax. It was a whole thing. But, you know, and he said shooting people was a normal thing. It was no big deal.
Well, that's what happened. I mean, we talk about this all the time, you know, guys that disappeared.
I don't know. It seemed like a big deal.
It seems also like the murder aspect is as a way of, like, conflict resolution seems like a way to keep it almost personal. Like, it's between Tommy and Billy Batts. Like, the other way you could... hurt someone is by fucking with their money, but then you fuck with the entire family's enterprise, and then you piss off, you know, how many dozens, if not like 100 people, you know, like, this is just keeping it between him and Billy.
Yeah, there's a domino effect there, and that's the thing. Like, a lot of times these conflicts might happen, and, you know, like, that's kind of why Henry didn't go in. He's got to let Tommy do it, you know, like, Tommy has a problem, and he's going to solve it, and Henry's not going to stop him or help. But Jimmy will just kick, just start kicking. No, any excuse.
He's playing his
role. Drop him a hat.
Any excuse.
Ultimately, the point for me is, though, that the violence is also the flaw in the system because of that, because it is personal. Because what always happens is something flares up and you don't. You don't fix it. Just people get killed, and then it rolls out of control.
There's a fine. There's a very fine line here between just like the cliff they go over with the murderer is very short. You know, like it's not,
that's a good murder. But, oh no, that's a bad murder.
But that's the thing also, and that's why this particular murder was bad, and why they potentially were in trouble. And we'll get into this later in the movie. But like the whole idea was that there was a system of respect and a system of honor in, you know, if the mafia existed, which it doesn't. There, you know, in order to do this, you needed to get the okay of someone above the person you want to kill. So
that's one of my notes. What he says that there was a if you wanted to do something like this, there was a process. What do you think that process was like?
The process is going to his boss. So in this particular case, Billy Bats is part of the Gambino crew. So whoever was the head of the Gambino family, I'm not sure if Carlo Gambino was still in, at this point or whatever. But so go to the head of his family and say, you know, this happened. He disrespected me. I want resolution. You know, and they'll either say, okay, yeah, you can kill him, or no, well, you know, or you know, you have some of his, you know, his rackets or some of his routes, or you know, like there'd be some sort of restitution. There was a system,
and it was Carlo Gambino still.
Yeah, so
they would have a sit down.
Yeah,
but so, also wouldn't the first person that they go to, wouldn't that be Paulie?
Yeah, the first person they go to is Paulie. Then Paulie would go up to above Paulie to because Paulie's just a capo. He's not the head of the family. I mean, he's part of the Lucchese family, so he's got to go up to Lucchese, and then or whoever's
not an underboss.
He's not to the point of being able to go to Carlo Gambino.
He's not a capo though. He's higher than that.
What's the hierarchy again?
Underboss.
Yeah, he's probably an underboss.
Sous chef.
Yeah. But regardless of what it is, Paulie was only the head of the crew. He wasn't the head of the family. So Paulie's got to bump it up to somebody else, who then has to agree to say, yeah, no, yeah, Paulie's more. Yeah, you're right. Paulie's probably more an underboss, and whereas Jimmy's probably more. Well, not, Jimmy's not a capo, but yeah, but you know, but like a captain kind of, you know, kind of.
I
thing.
Guess we kind of see this earlier in the film when I can't remember the guy who owns the tiki bar, but like he goes to. Yeah, he goes to Hendry, and Hendry goes to Paulie, and then you know, he just kind of facilitates the thing.
That's
on a much higher level.
Yeah, that's on a much local level. That's me. So right. So Sonny Buns, who is not a maid, who is not in the family at all, he's just somebody who owns a restaurant, has a problem with somebody in Paulie's crew. He goes to Hendry. Hendry brokers it and sets up a meeting with Paulie. You see, so what would have had to happen then is that they would have, you know, Tommy's got to go to Paulie, say this is what happened. Paulie's got to say let it go, or yeah, let's go talk to the Gambinos and see what we can do about it.
And Tommy did the math on all that in a very short amount of time. He said this isn't going to work out, and I still want to kill this guy, so I think I'm going to do it anyway.
What I was going to say is that them knowing all of this, and in hindsight, it being so finite and sure, why did they do it?
Well, I think you guys are giving Tommy way too much credit.
Yes, agreed.
Tommy is a psychopath who everyone else was afraid of because he would snap and not even think about what he was doing, other than he had rage and he wanted to kill.
Yeah, because those are the people who thrived in the system. Violence is the flaw in the system.
Right. Mm-hmm. Also,
if they just did business, everything would be fine.
Paul Vario was a capo.
He was a capo. There we go. Oh, well, there we go. Yeah. So we gave Paulie more credit than he deserved.
Well, he's got a lot of gravitas.
But I think the important point thing here, too, is that this is a dramatization and an illustration of the violence and when situations deviated out of control. And like we talked about last week, the time span between the murder and the incident was 3 weeks, and the actual murder was probably more business-based than personal. But
These are just blue-collar guys.
Yeah, they're just cutting corners.
Yeah, they're shining shoes.
Ryan, do you want to explain to people what the concept of a made man is?
Have we not talked about that, or...?
Kind of did. At the end, Henry lets us know that Billy was made, and that was a big problem.
Yeah. So basically what that means is that this is, you know, a made man is a...
You want to talk about this?
I probably shouldn't. Yeah, it's a good point. But we talked about it when we introduced the bats. I think we already talked about it. Real quickly, I will just touch upon it, is that if the mafia existed, they have a system to fully initiate a member into their ranks. And in order to do that, you need to be 100% Italian. You need to be able to trace your lineage back to the old country. Yeah, exactly.
Does it have to be Sicily in particular?
No, it doesn't have to be Sicily, although a lot of it came from Sicily. But it doesn't have to be Sicily specifically. And also, in reality, they weaken that rule as the years have gone on, by the way. But yeah, so basically, it's just a matter of idea of
is there a newsletter? How do you?
But basically, the idea is that it's just saying that somebody's with, you know, like, he's with us. He's, you know, fully initiated. He's committed. He's taken the oath of silence, and, you know, and basically it's like tenure. Let's just, you know, it's like that. So there you go.
That's a very special kind of tenure.
Yeah.
That's wonderful what you just did there.
So, does anyone have any note? Anyone else have any notes on this minute?
No.
Oh, I was no. I was going to.
I'm not speaking for you.
I was just going to bring up the structure of this film in particular, because it's so emblematic of the entire film's structure. Like, not only does the minute pick up, like, you know, 20, 30 seconds in to the beginning of the film, giving context to what happened in the beginning. So it's not this like episodic little thing. It gives context to that whole thing. And then at the end of the minute, it goes back to the beginning of the hit.
Right.
Like, inside of 60 seconds, Scorsese and Schoonmaker flip the narrative in different directions like four times.
Well, yeah. And as a way to, now we're 1 hour into the movie, and it's almost as if like everything before this was preface.
Yes. And now we're here.
And now the movie is starting, you know?
Yeah.
Now we've hit now.
Now, right.
That
exactly.
Was present.
Yeah.
This is now. Now.
I also real quickly, I think we missed, aren't we supposed to drink at the Jimmy kicking freeze frame? Aren't we supposed to drink at every freeze frame?
I thought we were just kicking when Jimmy does a sideways look.
Okay, I don't know, but anyway, there's a great Jimmy mid kick freeze frame at the end of the minute, which he holds for like 3 seconds.
What's the pre-freeze frame? Yeah. They come into it; it's frozen. I mentioned this earlier.
Yeah,
as opposed to freezing it after the movie.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Right.
There's a reverse freeze frame.
Which is jarring itself because it, you know, it's jumping time again, and it's not moving. You know, it's completely still.
Yep. It's the old reverse freeze frame.
Nice.
That old gambit.
Yeah. So that's all I got.
So the fuck count for this minute is zero. I don't think there are any fucks in the voiceovers throughout the film.
I think they make up for it with multiple stabs.
Fuck. Yeah.
And the fun fact for this minute is that the Pontiac Grand Prix I don't know. I'm sure Ron, your dad, knows. I do not know what year this particular Grand Prix is in the film. But in 1969, the year before this incident, sold 112,000 plus cars.
You didn't sell this one.
And in 1970, it sold only 65,000.
Well, so to answer your question, Connor, it is a 1968 Pontiac Grand Prix. So there you go.
1 year.
What did they sell in 68?
I don't know. I don't have all the years in front of me. Just those.
It was a stolen 1968 Pontiac Grand Prix.
You don't know that.
Someone bought it.
You assume that. You don't know he stole his car. That car. Why would he steal a car? Why would he bring
my mother's name?
Why would he bring that heat on him? You're like, yeah.
That's a dumb mistake to make.
Yeah. He bought it with cash.
Get pulled over because it's a car that's reported stolen, and they find the body, then it's all over.
Yeah.
Somebody else stole it. They wiped the VIN.
Here's what we're learning, Ron, is that we should never involve Josh in any.
Oh, I know. His instincts are the opposite of what we need, Connor.
I thought that's what I'm here for.
That's true. I have terrible criminal instincts, and I will own that entirely.
You sound too proud.
That's it for Minute 61. Tune in tomorrow for Minute 62. Until then, you can check us out on Twitter at GoodfellasMin and on Instagram and Facebook at GoodfellasMinute. You can find all of our episodes at GoodfellasMinute.com. Hank or Hendry, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Nasserbacht, which is my last name. It's NASSERBAKHT.
All right.
Old world. Old Italian.
Real old.
So fucking old.
And you can support the show by going to patreon.com/GFM or go to goodfellowsminute.com/support, where you can shop via Amazon, especially during the holiday season. If you have any questions or anything of note, you can email us at contact@goodfellowsminute.com. You don't even have to be related to Ron to do that. And we look forward to Friday, in which we bestow upon another patron a mob name. We open the books for them. So look forward to that on Friday. Until then, until tomorrow, actually. We'll talk to you later.
I go from rags to riches. My fate is up to you.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now?
I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.